evening. Welcome to tonight's program. My name is Mike Malloy. Thanks for tuning in. Yes, it is Friday, isn't it? I was just reading Anne Rice, who wrote Interview with the Vampire. That was her first big breakout book. Remember Anne Rice? Huh? You liked her, didn't you, Kathy?
I liked her until she became a Jesus freak.
Well, I've got some news for you. You don't know about this. After she wrote Interview with a Vampire, she wrote a book about her spirituality that was titled Called Out of Darkness, A Spiritual Confession. She wrote that a couple of years ago. Well, she said yesterday that she refuses to be anti-gay, anti-feminist, anti-science, and anti-democrat. She wrote this, I guess, on her blog. She went on to say, quote, "For those who care, and I understand it if you don't, today I quit being a Christian. It's simply impossible for me to belong to this quarrelsome, hostile, disputatious, and deservedly infamous group. For 10 years, I've tried. I've failed. I'm an outsider. My conscience will allow nothing else." End quote. Well, yeah, good for Anne Rice. I'm glad she finally came out of the ether. I couldn't believe it either when, didn't her big conversion happen shortly after her longtime husband died?
Stan Rice,
right. And it was shortly after that that Anne Rice claimed this huge conversion that she had found, you know, the black hole through which she could connect with Stan, I guess. Well, it's certainly good news. Like Anne Rice says, if you don't care, she understands. I understand, too. Nobody really gives a damn or shouldn't about somebody else's spiritual path or lack thereof, right? But since Anne Rice was just a major writer at one time in this country, she still is, but I mean, she hasn't had a book out like Interview with the Vampire since Interview with the Vampire, which was amazing book. I loved it. No, we're not video streaming tonight. It's too hot down here today. We should start right away with news from the world of economics. According to MarketWatch, the U.S. economy lost momentum in the second quarter. Those figures were released today. They are raising concerns of an extended recession, if not an outright so-called double dip. Here we go again. Bart Van Ark, who's the chief economist at the conference board, said, quote, "The post-recession rebound is history." That's not necessarily good to hear, is it? Well, Prairie 2 weighs in on this, and here he goes. Subject line, "Obama owns the car companies and business is booming." He writes, "The second quarter GDP numbers are in, or rather a preliminary guess at the numbers is being widely reported. It was not a good number, and worse than economists had predicted. There was a growth, but only from increased imports and from business buying more equipment and software. Consumer spending continues to sag with declining wages and increased job losses. Increased business investment sounds good, but they have no intention of hiring. Rather, they are intent on squeezing more out of their employees, and they need new and different equipment to handle the increased level of imports. The only bright spot in employment is from Detroit, where they have skipped the usual summer layoffs and are hiring. In fact, the last time they had a year this good, Bill Clinton was president. Indeed, the unemployment numbers would be dismal if they didn't have these people working in Detroit to rebuild inventory. The Republicans are still claiming Obama's rescue of Detroit was a huge mistake, since taxpayers will never see their money. The truth is that GM and even Chrysler are on track to pay back Obama's $60 billion loan package, provided the Republicans don't sink the economy completely. There is a small portion of truth in the conservatives' otherwise disingenuous claims, as the automakers have no intention of repaying the $17 billion no-strings-attached gift that Bush made to them on his way out the door. And Obama doesn't intend to require it of them either. Obama could, in theory, as their largest stockholder, compel them to repay the gift from Bush, but Obama was forced to agree not to interfere in the car company's management by the same Republicans that will tell anybody stupid enough to listen to them that under Obama's socialism, he owns the car companies. They're so stupid. Indeed, most U.S. companies are doing well, and most are hiring, but most of that hiring is going on overseas. The fact that they are doing so well has much to do with the fact that a large portion of the trade deficit is U.S. companies doing business with their own offshore divisions and thereby offshoring their profits. Oh, and dodging U.S. taxes. The Republicans have the fix for that, however, and that's to eliminate all corporate taxes. Oh, and the taxes on the rich, too, to stimulate investment, don't you know? Of course, there would still be no incentive for them to return jobs to the U.S., since no matter how low they drive down wages here, they can do the same work cheaper overseas. Besides, with Americans' wages heading toward the floor, there would be no market in the United States anyway. PrairieNumeral2.com. I hope some of you crazy right-wing bastards go to his website and send him bad emails, because I'm going to ask him to send me those emails and we will post them someplace. I guess you have seen the video now of New York Democratic Representative Anthony Weiner, who finally got pissed off enough to unload on these filthy, disgusting Republicans. In this case, it was Peter King, another New Yorker. You know, Anthony Weiner is absolutely the kind of guy that I would vote for, the kind of guy that, you know, I've been talking about, and you probably have, too, for a long time. The problem here is that, for me, maybe not for you, is his position on the Israeli-Palestinian situation is so pro-Israeli, he might as well be in the Knesset. Anything I've ever heard Anthony Weiner say about the situation in the Middle East has always been 100% pro-Israel and 100% anti-Palestinian. No matter what happens, Weiner always finds a way to justify any atrocity that is committed by Israel against the Palestinians. And, you know, I'm sorry that that goes on. There are so many, to me, people in the Democratic Party, in Congress, who have great ideas. And, you know, to the extent that I can, I support them, certainly support their ideas. I don't vote Democratic anymore. I don't look for the D after their names. But I will, you know, I will vote for a Democrat, for God's sake. But it'll be based on what the Democrat does or stands for or says he or she's going to do, not the fact they have a D behind their name, which is what I used to do. But so many of these vocal, angry, although Weiner is one of the few who lets it come out like he did today, vocal, angry Democrats, who happen to be Jewish, refuse, where it concerns Israel and Palestine, to see any daylight at all where it might concern the Palestinians having legitimacy to some of their claims. And that's a shame. We'll play for you Weiner's tirade. And I love the word tirade when it's used like this. We'll play Anthony Weiner's tirade for you when we come back. Stay with us. if you don't know the setup yet, where it concerns Anthony Weiner and it's Peter King, you'll hear in the background trying to interrupt him. Last night, House Republicans deliberately and consciously blocked a bill providing billions of dollars for health care for first responders and others who are suffering due to breathing in the poison on September 11th after George W. Bush instructed Christy Whitman, the head of the EPA, to lie, as she dutifully did because she's another Republican, and say that the air quality in lower Manhattan was safe enough for people to go to work. The Republicans blocked this bill providing some assistance to people who are losing their ability to breathe. What happens when you lose your ability to breathe, for God's sake? The Republicans were able to block this bill because Democrats used a procedural maneuver to prevent Republicans from adding pointless partisan amendments to a bill that would provide funds for people who are losing their ability to breathe. But once the Democrats did that, it meant that the bill needed two-thirds supermajority to pass. 159 Republicans then voted against the bill. So Anthony Weiner took to the floor, and this is what he said.
Oh, sorry.
Breaking up.
I had it muted. I'm sorry.
Okay, let's. Can you reset it, and let's start again. This is what Anthony Weiner said.
The gentleman from New York is recognized.
Mr. Speaker, I yield 1 minute to the distinguished gentleman from New York, Mr. Weiner.
The gentleman is recognized.
Great courage until all members have already spoken and then stand up and wrap your arms around procedure. We see it in the United States Senate every single day where members say, we want amendments, we want debate, we want amendments, but we're still a no. And then we stand up and say, oh, if only we had a different process, we'd vote yes. You vote yes if you believe yes. You vote in favor of something if you believe it's the right thing. If you believe it's the wrong thing, you vote no. We are following a procedure. I will not yield to the gentleman, and the gentleman will observe regular order. The gentleman will observe regular order. The gentleman thinks that if he gets up and yells at him, he's going to intimidate people into believing he's right. He is wrong. The gentleman is wrong. The gentleman is providing cover for his colleagues rather than doing the right thing. It's Republicans wrapping their arms around Republicans rather than doing the right thing on behalf of the heroes. It is a shame, a shame. If you believe this is a bad idea to provide health care, then vote no. But don't give me the cowardly view that, oh, if it was a different procedure, the gentleman will observe regular order and sit down. I will not. The gentleman will sit. The gentleman is correct in sitting. I will not.
Despite obviously not in order. General will suspend.
I will not stand here and listen to my colleagues say, oh, if only I had a different procedure that allows us to stall, and then vote no. Instead of standing up and defending your colleagues and voting no on this humane bill, you should urge them to vote yes, something the gentleman has not done.
Well, you see what the Republicans do. And the only reason they do this is because they are determined with the election so close. They don't give a damn if there's a vote on the floor about aid to the widows and children of dead veterans. They don't care. They don't care if it's about medical assistance money for people who responded to the worst attack on this country since 1812 and went to New York, the ones that weren't already there to help out, and then were lied to by another Republican that it's okay. You don't worry. There's nothing bad in the air. The Republicans don't care what the issue is. What they'll do is pretend like they're debating. They will offer up all kinds of amendments. The Democrats, being the cowardly bastards that they are, fall back, allow the Republicans to add the amendments. And finally, when it comes to the floor for a vote, the Republicans, as just in totality, vote no, with the possible exception of Olympia Snow and the other one from Maine. And they vote no. And this is what Anthony Weiner was going crazy about. And he should. So it was the Zadroga 9/11 Health and Compensation Act. That was the bill. I like the way the Daily News reports it. New York Daily News. Congress turned thumbs down. No, Congress didn't. And damn Michael McAuliffe, who's writing for the Daily News, reporting it that way. Congress did not turn thumbs down. The Republicans turned thumbs down. And then in the next sentence, the writer for the Daily News says, most Republicans refused to back the measure, calling it a slush fund and saying it was another example of Democratic overreach and an insatiable appetite for taxpayer money. Keep that in mind when you go to vote in November, if you're going to go vote. Zadroga, it's the name of one of the people who was a first responder to the Bush crime family engineered attack on this country on September 11th, 2001. The Zadroga 9/11 Health and Compensation Act would have spent $3.2 billion on health care over the next 10 years. For people sickened from their exposure to the poisonous, toxic smoke and debris of the blown-up World Trade Center. It would spend another $4.2 billion to compensate victims over that span and make yet another $4.2 billion in compensation available for the next 11 years. Lamar Smith, a Republican from Texas, said, this legislation is written creates the huge $8.4 billion slush fund paid by taxpayers that is open to abuse and fraud and waste, end quote. Some filthy pig like this guy talking about abuse, fraud, and waste? Representative John Shimkus, Republican of Illinois, said the bill was a money grab for New York. A money grab for the city of New York. He said, what this is politics. What this is enfranchising a bunch of New York City hospitals. These are Republicans. Bob Goodlatte, Republican of Virginia. This fund is bloated. Texas Republican Joe Barton, you remember him, the one that apologized to BP, said the Republicans would back a smaller program. But he said the rest of the country should not bear the brunt of helping New Yorkers cope with the aftermath of the terror attacks. Can you believe that? It's my understanding from listening to Anthony Weiner, the entire tape, that of the 435 congressional districts in this country, there were people who came to New York to help from 430 of them. And this piece of human waste, Joe Barton, the Texas Republican, says the rest of the country should not bear the brunt of helping New Yorkers. Now, how is it paid for? Taxes? No. The measure would have been paid for by closing tax loopholes on foreign subsidiaries that do business in the United States, which the Republicans also oppose, saying it was a tax hike on foreign companies that hire Americans. No, they don't! As pointed out earlier, Democrats would have been able to pass the bill if they used the normal procedure, but they brought it up as a so-called suspension bill, which needs a two-thirds vote to pass, because that way it can't be amended. The Democrats feared the Republicans would attach poison pills to the bill, which they tried to do. So the bill failed. 255 voted yes. 159 voted no. 12 Republicans voted yes. 12 Republicans who did not get the memo from Rush Limbaugh and Peter King and the rest of this filth that they weren't supposed to vote for medical compensation and care for people who are losing their ability to breathe. Thanks to Republicans who engineered the attack on this country to begin with. Wow. Mayor Bloomberg of New York slammed the failure, calling it outrageous, his word, and he blamed both sides. He said, Bloomberg, what's Bloomberg's first name?
Mayor.
Mayor?
Michael
Bloomberg, yeah. He said, quote, it was wrong for the overwhelming majority of Republicans to vote against the bill, and it was wrong for Democrats to bring the bill to the floor under rules that made passage so much more difficult, end quote. Obviously, Michael Bloomberg, who used to be a Democrat before he decided he wanted to spend tens of millions of dollars to repeatedly be the mayor of New York, apparently he has forgotten how the Republican Party works in Washington. They attach amendments to everything and then vote against it, vote no anyway. At least during the age of the Kenyan in the White House, the colored man who is trying to run the country, and the Caucasians in the Republican Party, which is all of them, will not have that. These are people who, the people who would have been helped, are people who are losing their lives, literally. They're losing their ability to breathe. Just stop breathing. Stop breathing for 2 minutes. Go ahead, let's see you do it. They're losing their ability to breathe, or better yet, I'll tell you what, why don't you do this tomorrow? Go get a straw. You got a straw in the house? Go get a straw. Stick it in your mouth. And then spend the day breathing through the straw, no matter what you do. Running, going up and down the steps, get in the car, get out of the car. Whatever you do, breathe through the straw. See how that feels. These people are losing their lives. They've lost their health. And America owes them. But these filthy, disgusting Republicans, once again, said no. Republicans are anti-life. They're pro-death. They're pro-corporatism. They couldn't care less. Now, there's something else. Every Republican voted against the tax bill that would have helped small businesses. You know how the Republicans are always talking about they're in favor of small businesses? Oh, we love small businesses. It was a bill supported by nearly every Republican, even co-written and sponsored by them, and they blocked it when it came up for a vote. This is what they do for one reason. They don't want any bill to pass before the elections in November that may show Democrats in a good light, right? So the small business bill, the Republicans said no. yesterday that would have the small business aid bill would have expanded loan programs and tax breaks. Tax breaks. It would have expanded tax breaks. And they voted no as a procedural way to deny Democrats any further legislative accomplishments before November's midterm elections. And as David Hersenhorn points out in New York Times, this bill, which was co-sponsored and championed by Mary Landrieu, Democrat of Louisiana, it had the backing of some of the Republican Party's most reliable allies in the business world, including the United Chamber of Congress, the National Federation of Independent Business. Several Republican lawmakers also helped write it. But Republican leaders filibustered after engaging for days in a fight with Democrats over the number of amendments that the Republicans would be able to offer during floor debate and what issues the amendments would cover. And last-ditch effort by offer by Democrats to allow Republicans to attach three amendments that have nothing to do with the bill. Nothing to do with helping small businesses. They offered them that. The Democrats did. Republican leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky said no. Incredible. Now, what they needed was 60 votes. Once again, that 60-vote thing that the Democrats are so horrified about, and Republicans are so good at using. You know, Republicans, there's not a Republican lawmaker whose mouth I wouldn't like to just smack. I seriously, all of them, I'd just like to slap them across the face because they are acting like juvenile delinquents. Not that I would slap a juvenile delinquent against the face, but I would damn sure slap a Republican lawmaker across the face for this kind of behavior. It is worse than childlike. It's not childlike. It is the kind of crazy that you know is an act. And what do you do with that kind of crazy? You slap it down. Small businesses in this country that also was stopped by the Republicans brought about criticism when it was defeated. Mary Landrieu, who was the chief sponsor, Democrat from Louisiana, criticized Mitch McConnell for blocking the measure, and she warned that some businesses might fail as a result of the action by the Senate. Well, of course, that was the whole idea, so they wouldn't fail. Landrieu said in a floor speech, quote, "Our businesses have picked up enough weight. They can't handle that weight. And if we don't give them some help now, today, many of them aren't going to be here. And I want the senator from Kentucky to know when we show up in September that some of these businesses won't be here." The legislation we're talking about here, that all the Republicans voted no, would have created a $30 billion lending program within the Treasury Department. It would have been administered through local community banks. Local, even in Kentucky. It would also have provided more than $12 billion in tax breaks. Right? Tax breaks. Isn't that what the Republican filth is always asking for? Tax breaks? And it also would have expanded or enhanced various existing government lending programs for small businesses. Now, the bill that would have provided funding for people who are losing their ability to breathe as a result of 9/11 attacks, not a single dime of that, it's my understanding, would have been paid for with taxpayer money. Except the taxpayers that are corporations that are now using loopholes. But you never hear that part. You want to know something else you don't hear? Regarding Anthony Weiner's speech on the floor, do you know who his wife is? I bet you don't, because I didn't. Her name is Huma Abedin. She is an aide to Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. And during Clinton's campaign for the Democratic nomination during the 2008 presidential election, she traveled, she served as the traveling chief of staff to Hillary Clinton. And she was the body woman, just like, what's this guy, Reggie, somebody who's the body man for Obama. That's somebody who is always there, always equipped to handle whatever the president or the secretary of state or whomever, whatever they want. Pack of gum, an appointment book, a cell phone, get me this person on the phone, here, hold my coat, what time is it, who am I supposed to meet? You know, body woman, body man, they're there all the time. Now, let me give you a little history on Abedin. She was born in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Her father is from India, and he was a Muslim, a Middle Eastern scholar who died when she was 17. Her mother was born in Pakistan, and she is currently a professor in Saudi Arabia. At the age of two, her family relocated to Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. Ms. Abedin returned to the United States to attend George Washington University. She began working as an intern in the White House in 1996 and landed an assignment with Hillary Clinton when she was first lady. During the campaign for the 2008 South Carolina, here we go, South Carolina presidential primary, an anonymous email was distributed which claimed that, quote, Hillary Clinton is having a lesbian affair with Huma Abedin, her beautiful aide, end quote. South Carolina. Huma Abedin has since risen to the role of Hillary Clinton's right-hand woman. She currently works for Clinton at the State Department. She married New York Representative Anthony Weiner on Saturday, July 10th. Yeah, this past Saturday. Former President Bill Clinton presided at the wedding, which took place at the Ohika Castle in Huntington on Long Island. Now, if you want to see a picture of this woman, Huma, H-U-M-A, Abedin, A-B-E-D-I-N. But notice how small these circles are. This is Anthony Weiner's wife. And that's why I have a lot of trouble understanding why Anthony Weiner is so unwilling to open up his ears and his mind to the situation in the Middle East to the extent that he would even consider the Palestinian issue. It's astonishing to me. I don't understand. Oh, well, it's not for me to understand. We got a couple of emails here I want to share with you. And also at the bottom of the next hour coming, it's Friday, so we will be giving away another one-year subscription to Malloy Show podcast downloads, commercial free. All you have to do is get the right answer to the multiple choice question that we'll ask you. So Oh, by the way, the information on Huma Abedin came from Irish Dave, as so much of this stuff does. I don't know how he does this. He has become this program's buddy man. Well, I've said before, there's several people who provide information to this program that it's astonishing how quickly they get it to me, how exact it is, and how absolutely correct it is. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Subscription to the Malloy Show commercial-free podcast downloads has a retail value of $59.60. Got an email from Pamela in Minnesota. She writes, "Greetings, Mike. I'm a longtime listener, current podcast subscriber. I live here in Minneapolis, where the Target store controversy is in full force. Target's contribution to Tom Emmer." Indirect, yet direct contribution to Tom Emmer, also known as a crazy teabagger freak, has brought outcry and boycotting from the gay, lesbian, bi, and transgender community, which is great. But the problem for me isn't just Emmer's anti-gay stance. He's from the same right-wing asylum as Michelle Bachmann, with the same hateful, anti-government, anti-human, unless you are wealthy, agenda. I don't understand Minnesota anymore. This used to be a solid blue democratic state that cared about people more than corporate interests. I grew up in a small mining town, which was 98% Caucasian, where everyone worked in unionized jobs. It was always the worker versus the man, and union members were proud and active. Over the past 20 to 30 years, those same small-town people have taken an ugly turn in beliefs and rhetoric. They have slowly been convinced that, quote, poor brown people, end quote, are taking everything away from them. They honestly believe this. They have become ultra-bigoted, conservative, outwardly religious, and hating anything to do with reason, science, or higher education. They shun those who have left town to get an education or travel, I being, quote, one of those, end quote. It is really shocking and politically brilliant how the right-wing propagandists in this country have brainwashed average working-class white people by giving them a boogeyman, brown people, convincing them that tax breaks are for the wealthy, not for them. and that the government wants their guns. Once you get these folks to believe and fear these things, they are gone. It is so incredibly sad in my hometown these days. Nothing but hate, bigotry, threats, poverty, religious zealots. I'm sickened and have difficulty returning there for any reason. I fear confrontation and get it from within my own family. It seems there's no room now for respectful, civilized, healthy debate. It just turns into illogical hate and rage every time. What is happening to my state and country is making me sick. It has for the past decade. Thank goodness I have friends in Sweden and Canada, because I think that's where I will end up settling. I need to flee the asylum and watch it burn, if that's what it's going to do, from afar. Pamela. I get a lot of those these days. I really do. They're so true. The way that white working class people have been so beaten into a bloody pulp by people like Beck. The corporate media. Teabaggers. Right-wing demagogues. Top 10 signs you're a fundamentalist Christian. Number 10. You vigorously deny the existence of thousands of gods claimed by other religions, but you feel outraged when someone denies the existence of yours. Number 9. You feel insulted and dehumanized when scientists say that people evolved from other life forms, but you have no problem with the biblical claim that you were created from dirt. Number 8. You laugh at polytheists, but you have no problem believing in a triune God. Number 7. Your face turns purple when you hear of the atrocities attributed to Allah, but you don't even flinch when hearing about how God or Jehovah slaughtered all the babies of Egypt in Exodus, the book of Exodus, and ordered the elimination of entire ethnic groups in Joshua, including women, children, and trees. Number 6, you laugh at Hindu beliefs that deify humans and Greek claims about God sleeping with women, but you have no problem believing that the Holy Spirit impregnated Mary, who then gave birth to a man-god who got killed, came back to life, and then ascended into the sky. Number 5, you are willing to spend your life looking for little loopholes in the scientifically established age of the earth, a few billion years, but you find nothing wrong with believing dates recorded by Bronze Age tribesmen sitting in their tents and guessing that the earth is a few generations old, that's all. Number 4, you believe that the entire population of this planet, with the exception of those who share your beliefs, though excluding those in all rival sects, will spend eternity in an infinite hell of suffering. And yet you consider religion the most tolerant and loving. Number 3. While modern science, history, geology, biology, and physics have failed to convince you otherwise, some idiot rolling around on the floor speaking in tongues may be all the evidence you need to prove Christianity. Number 2, you define 0.01% as a, quote, high success rate when it comes to answered prayers. You consider that to be evidence that prayer works, and you think that the remaining 99.99% failure rate was simply the will of God. And number 1, you actually know a lot less than many atheists and agnostics do about the Bible, Christianity, and church history, but still you call yourself a Christian. Ain't that the truth? Anne Rice, in case you missed the first part of the program, the author of Interview with a Vampire, including many other books, Anne Rice has given the middle finger to Christianity after her 10-year attempt to understand what the hell it's all about. And she gave up. She says she can't stand the bigotry, the nastiness, the hatred, the corruption. Welcome back to reality, Anne. Given all that, all the stuff we've been telling you about the Republicans, the battle between Harry Reid and the teabag freak Sharon Angle in Nevada is deadlocked. According to a new poll, a Mason-Dixon survey conducted by for the Los Angeles Review-Journal and KLAS-TV indicates that 43% of Nevada voters support Reid, 42% support Angle. In a recent Mason-Dixon poll, which was conducted 2 weeks ago, Reid led by 7 points. Oh, my God. How does anybody explain this? Have you seen Sharon Angle? She's like Michelle Bachmann. She is insane. She is completely so far out of her crawl space the spring has broken. I mean, she's mad. This is a mad woman. I'm talking literally. This is not no metaphors here. She is literally clinically insane, as is Bachmann. As is so many Republicans, especially these teabaggers. The teabaggers have just completely gone over the edge. And the weird part of it is they want to take everybody else with them. I guess that's, it's kind of like Christians who say, well, if you don't believe what I believe, you're going to burn in hell forever. Forever! Really? So here we have Sharon Angle, who has as much business running for the Senate in Nevada as she has, rolling on the floor someplace, talking in tongues and holding snakes up in her hands. But this is America, so you have a right to make as big of an ass of yourself as you want to, right? Six more of our soldiers have been killed in Afghanistan over the past, 2 days? That makes July, and there's 1 day to go. The deadliest month for American forces in the entire 9 years since we invaded. The deadliest. This month. That's a total of 66 dead Americans this month. Roadside bombs, firefights. Well, nobody pays that much attention to it. Have you noticed if you're following any of the political campaigns, I don't care if it's Democratic or Republican, it doesn't make any difference. No mention. Anybody notice that? Any mention of the war in Afghanistan? Anybody talking about the fact that we have 130,000 troops in Iraq? Anyone talking about that in their political campaigns? Anyone talking about supporting the troops or getting the troops out? Anyone? Anyone talking about Afghanistan? Because arguably, these two occupations are, or is, one of the primary, are, taken together, gotta get my tenses right, one of the primary reasons that this country is going in the commode, financially. Nobody talks about it. Another scandal has enveloped the National Republican Congressional Committee. Two Texas Republicans. You read about this in the Times today. Oh, my God. Remember Sam and Charles Wiley? They're the ones that bankrolled the Swift Boat veterans against Kerry. Remember that? They also contributed more than $160,000 to the National Republican Congressional Committee, NRCC. Anyway, these two rapacious right-wing bastards are stand accused by the SEC of using overseas accounts to commit a $500 million fraud on American taxpayers. Now, making matters more interesting, the chairman of the NRCC, Pete Sessions, he's not Sessions from Alabama, by the way, he received $35,000 himself from the Wiley brothers. According to the Washington Post and New York Times, these two billionaire brothers in Texas, Sam and Charles Wiley, have been accused in a complaint by the SEC of violating federal securities laws, committing fraud by using offshore accounts to secretly trade the shares of public companies whose boards they sat on, reaping more than $500 million in profit for themselves. And these two are connected very deeply to Karl Rove's American Crossroads organization, a front organization for more corporatism or neo-Nazism in this country. They're also connected to the Bush family. According to Jennifer Kreider, who's a spokesperson for the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, quote, Karl Rove's American Crossroads has been raising millions of dollars from secret Republican sources. With the news of the Wiley brothers' $500 million fraud against American taxpayers, Karl Rove must come clean about how much of this shady Wiley money is being used to fund American Crossroads and their lies against Democrats. I mean, end quote. It's astonishing. The Wiley brothers have a long history with George Herbert Walker Bush, George W. Bush, Karl Rove. Oh, my God. These two capitalist swine funded a group called Republicans for Clean Air, a political action committee that attacked John McCain for his environmental record during the 2000 primaries. In the aftermath of his defeat, McCain specifically cited this group in his plea for more and better campaign finance reform. These two wretched swine funded Swift Boat veterans in 2004, along with American Crossroads donor Harold Simmons. Among the largest donors to the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth were the Wiley brothers and Harold Simmons, the Dallas billionaire, who is bankrolling American Crossroads. The Wileys helped bankroll Bush's inauguration. I mean, it just never stops. Republicans truly define the word filth. They don't belong in the human race. Republicans should do the honorable thing and follow Glenn Beck's lead. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Time for trivia. Get on the line if you'd like to play. 877-996-2556.
I'm sure that Europe is a lovely place to visit.
subscription to commercial-free podcast downloads. Every day it'll be in your email.
Woo!
All you have to do is answer the question correctly. All right, cut the music. Ron is in Phoenixville, PA, listening online. Hey, Ron.
Hey, Mike.
All right, you ready to do this?
Yeah, I'll give it a shot.
Okay. There were a record 160 active duty Army suicides in the year from October 1st, 2008 to September 30th, 2009. The Pentagon continues to ignore the mental health problems of our troops and is blaming this incredibly high rate of troop suicides on which of the following? One, the troops were upset that a Democrat of mixed race was occupying the White House. B, the increased suicide rate is a result of over-identifying with talk show personality Glenn Beck. C, to fulfill recruitment quotas, the military has been accepting more drug addicts and petty criminals than they did previously. And D, the troops were disappointed because they were not able to invade and occupy Iran. Which is it?
That's a tough question.
All right, let me do it again. What is the Army saying is the cause of this incredibly high suicide rate? A, the troops are upset because a Democrat was occupying the White House. B, it's a result of over-identifying with talk show personality Glenn Beck. C, the military has been accepting more drug addicts and petty criminals than they did previously. Or D, the troops were disappointed that they were not able to invade and occupy Iran.
I'm just going to have to take a guess. I'm leaning towards C, but I don't know. I'll say D, because if it's the Pentagon, it's going to be absurd.
No.
No? Okay.
Yeah, all right. No, it's not that one, but I'll tell you what. Rather than tell you what the correct answer is, we're going to take one more. And thanks. I appreciate you checking in, Ron. Let's try Mary in Los Angeles. Hey, Mary.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm fine. Did you hear the question?
Yes, but can you repeat it?
Okay, be happy to. Here's the question. There were a record 160 active duty Army suicides in the year from October 1st, 2008, to September 30th, 2009. The Pentagon continues to ignore the mental health problems of our troops and is blaming this high rate of troop suicides to which of the following? A, the troops were upset because a Democrat of mixed race is occupying the White House, therefore they're killing themselves. B, the increased rate is a result of over-identifying with talk show personality Glenn Beck, who eventually will. C, to fulfill recruitment quotas, the military has been accepting more drug addicts and petty criminals than they did previously. Or D, the troops were disappointed that they were not able to invade and occupy Iran.
That's a tough one, but I'm
going to
go with C.
C. You're absolutely right.
Oh, I can't believe it. Oh, thank you. Oh.
All right. Well, hold on.
I sure will.
Mary and Kathy will get the pertinent information from you. I don't know. That seemed to be fairly simple to me. But that's because I talk about this stuff so often. I would have thought that it would have been B, the increased suicide rate as a result of over-identifying with Glenn Beck. Oh, God. I read something today that Maniac was someplace out on the road telling people that a horrible violence is going to occur. Oh, my God. Yeah, well, let's hope that the horrible violence that occurs is by his hand to his own body. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Back to this, I'm not finished yet with this this bit about Samuel and Charles Wiley, the billionaire brothers from Dallas, who backed just about every bogus conservative cause in America because they're thieves, liars, sneaks. They commit fraud on a scale that should make Bernie Madoff blush. they the civil charges, I understand, according to what the Times had to say, there may be criminal charges coming also. But the criminal charges are part of a effort by the SEC to focus more sharply on enforcement of fraud and deceit and thievery. The Wiley brothers, Samuel Wiley is 75, Charlie is 76, and they say through a lawyer that the charges are without merit. Ain't no merit here. They don't have no merit, these charges. Just a bunch of damn liberals trying to get us. They've given millions of dollars to Republican candidates and organizations. The SEC case, which was filed in federal district court in Manhattan, centers on charges of securities fraud, insider trading related to the shares of companies founded by the Wiley brothers when they were serving as directors or executives. This includes the retail craft chain Michael's stores, Sterling Software, Sterling Commerce, and I guess this is an insurance company, Scottish Annuity and Life Holdings. The according to the SEC, once they defrauded everybody of $500 million, they used it to buy tens of millions of dollars of art, collectibles and jewelry, $100 million worth of real estate, including two ranches in Aspen, Colorado, a 100-acre horse farm near Dallas. And for charitable contributions, they sent $10 million to the business school of Sam's alma mater, University of Michigan. I wonder if University of Michigan is going to return it. The charges are the result of a six-year investigation that began in 2004 when Bank of America reported to the SEC that it had terminated numerous accounts held in the name of companies based in the Isle of Man because it could not, the SEC could not determine who actually owned the companies. The SEC found that those companies and similar ones registered in the Cayman Islands were, oh, blah, blah, blah. But this is what the ultra-wealthy do. They cheat the system. They lie. They defraud. They do anything they can to be dishonest citizens. What do you want to bet these guys go to church every Sunday? What do you want to bet these two are Bible thumpers in addition to being backers of conservative causes? But how often does this happen? Huh? How often does this happen? They lie and they cheat to get their money. And then the bobbleheads that follow psychopaths like Glenn Beck are told that the Wiley brothers, paragons of civitude, good Christian men who stand up for what's right, support the good causes that mean America will always be great, and none of this is happening. It's all lies, every single bit of it. And the reason it took 6 years to bring charges, you can figure out yourself, because every effort was made by the Bush crime family when they were in power to not let charges develop. But guess what? Anyway, also charged in the case were a lawyer for the Wileys and a stockbroker of Dallas. The SEC can only bring civil actions like this, but the brothers have previously been reported to be under criminal investigation for actions related to all this. The deputy director of the SEC's enforcement division declined to comment on whether the commission had referred what it's already found out about these swine to the Justice Department or other law enforcement agencies. Incredible stuff. It's in the Times. It's also in the Washington Post. And I'm sure it's probably in Wall Street Journal. You can look it up yourself if you want to. But when I saw that this morning, I thought, you know, it happens so often, almost with alarming regularity, almost to the extent that it doesn't make any sense to even talk about it. The religious fanatics are either the ones that scream against homosexuality are usually homosexual. The ones that scream against a drug addiction are usually shooting up. The ones that scream against sin are usually checking in with hookers every once in a while. In the non-religious world, the ones that scream against government corruption are corrupt down to their core. You ever notice that? Huh? Well, I'm sure you have. All right, break here. When we come back, we're going to open the phones. If you want to talk, let's do it. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Oh, the number here is 877-996-2556. Stay with us.
It's more Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. Email here from Kate regarding holding your breath and the fact that Republicans want people to go ahead and die as quickly as possible in as much pain as possible. That's what Republicans do. Regarding the first responders, Kate writes, 10 years later, the first responders to the World Trade Center mess can't breathe and don't get medical attention. Folks are dying from lack of oxygen. 5 years ago, the respiratory trauma due to Katrina mold and toxins and deadly FEMA trailers aren't being addressed. Folks are dying from lack of oxygen. 1 year from now, many more will die due to the dispersant suspended in the humid air all along the Gulf Coast. People are dead from lack of oxygen. Kate. It's just, it's endless, isn't it, huh? It's endless. The destruction that Republicans visit upon anything they touch. Anything they touch, they ruin. And after they have ruined everything they touch, the people who are involved, who are suffering, whether they are civilians in Iraq or civilians trying to clean up the World Trade Center mess, or civilians in the Katrina storm path, or civilians in Afghanistan, it doesn't make any difference. Let them die. Let them all die. Tim is in Detroit. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Mike. Wanted to kind of touch upon, in a related way to the story, you were talking about how the Wiley brothers have financed a lot of these far-right wing propaganda campaigns, like Swift Vote for Truth, and, you were talking about how they're connected to the Bush crime family, which has a long history of its own crimes dating back to the Civil War. But you had put out there several times, why don't liberal billionaires, fund progressive causes or for that matter, progressive radio?
Right.
And I have no, obviously, way to prove this, but I think because they are billionaires. In other words, to me, the billionaires and so on, they're part of a large international kind of bourgeoisie that pretty much its interests are antithetical to human existence as we know it, and all they care about are profits. So, of course, they would be pressured by their class not to fund anything progressive, because that would undercut capitalism.
That's certainly a distinct possibility. Then why do they mouth progressive points of view? Why do they say these handful of left-wing wealthy people, why do they say they're in favor of equal rights? Why do they say they're in favor of civil rights for everybody in this country, gay, straight, black, white, Jew, Gentile, whatever?
I got a little bit of a theory about that.
Okay.
Too.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, it's sort of like, in my view, is that capitalism fundamentally is an exploitive system that however you want to pretty it up, since it's concerned with profit, it's going to exploit the maximum number of people possible for that profit.
Right.
But within that capitalist framework, there are what I would call kind of the good cop and bad cop part of capitalism. In other words, you may have, let's say, a Barbara Streisand who will, maybe even as an individual, you know, espouse liberal causes. But I think that if anybody who's a major financier or billionaire steps out of line of the main trajectory of capitalism, which is to make a lot of money, they're going to be severely corralled. So I think they kind of, it's sort of a way to kind of fool the masses. It's kind of like, okay, yeah, we care about you. You know, we're billionaires, but we care. But ultimately, since they're part of a class whose interests are to exploit the vast number of people, of course, they're not going to really put their money where their mouth is, right?
Well,
my theory about that.
That's a good theory. It could also be that people on the left who get wealthy through whatever are just selfish. They don't believe that they have to give their money for liberal causes because they're greedy and selfish. I also think that so many people on the right, the capitalists, the conservatives, the real bad guys in the society, who have a lot of money, did not earn it. They got it either from family startup money or they scammed it or they stole it. Whereas a lot of people on the left, they earn it as entrepreneurs or they're in some sort of creative function, whether it's art or theater or music or whatever. And they actually worked for the money. So the greed or the desire to hold on to what they actually earned supersedes their commitment to social causes.
Yeah, that's sort of
that's another theory. I think there are several theories. I just don't have any idea why left-wing organizations have never, to any great degree, funded liberal or progressive or leftist media. They just, I mean, on a consistent, ongoing basis to the extent that the Republicans have.
Well, I'll give you an example. I remember the whole Amendment 2 debate in Colorado back in the 90s. There was an amendment to basically exclude the people who happened to be gay for more civil rights. And Barbara Streisand had really come out against Amendment 2, and good for her, right? That was excellent. And all the media crap she got, I mean, she was somehow this monster who was against American values, right? I'm sure she sincerely, you know, was against Amendment 2 as an individual, but all the crap she got, she probably had to think twice, you know, do I want to put my money in a lot of progressive causes? Will I get a lot of audience members who, you know, won't come to my shows? Yeah. Will I be blackballed? Will I be blacklisted?
So, well, that's a good point. So many liberal, wealthy liberals became wealthy through, like I said, through their work in the entertainment industry or entrepreneurship or whatever. And especially the ones in the entertainment industry, I think a lot of them are just afraid that if they become identified with, as you point out, human rights for gay folk, that somehow people won't buy tickets or the theaters will be picketed or whatever, and therefore they fall back on their cowardice. Hey, I got to leave there. Thanks, Tim. I appreciate the point of view. We'll be back after the break and take more of your phone calls. One open line, 877-996-2556. Stay with us. 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. On a Friday night, the phone number here is 877-99-MALLOY. How's that? Matt is in Minneapolis listening online. Hello, Matt.
Hello, Mike. I've always said that Bush is just was the whitehead on the pimple. The Wiley brothers, the Bass brothers, and any number of these people that are in this rotten onion when you peel the layers back, they're the base of this. And it never stops with these economic royals.
Mm-hmm.
They lie, cheat, steal, buy, manipulate, and you know, they get the teabaggers and Joe the plumber to do their bidding and carry their signs.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible how it's, even when you root them out, like the tumor that they are, they weasel back in with the money that's in our political system, and it's going to be very tough.
Well, I don't think it, when you say it's going to be very tough, I think what you mean is it's going to be very tough to purge our political system of these vermin.
Sure, they control it.
Right, it's going to be impossible. I don't know how you do it unless common sense would prevail and the United States Congress, and I doubt if Democrats or Republicans would do this, the United States Congress would declare that no money, none whatsoever, could come above $10, could come as a contribution to any sort of political campaign, political candidate, political activity, period. Get the money out of it. And I'm serious. So if somebody wanted to be president and had to raise $500 million, they'd have to get 50 million people to send them $10. The fact that all of our public offices now, I don't care what it is, these offices are bought from the presidency all the way down to county commissioners. These offices are bought. It depends on how much money you have in your campaign fund. Proof? Okay, here's your proof. Look at any campaign as it starts, a reelection campaign, and what's the first thing they talk about? How much money the candidate, whether the candidate is there for reelection or election the first time, how much money the candidate has in his or her account? Not if the candidate is honest. Not if the candidate is hardworking. Not if the candidate really wants to improve the quality of life for himself and his fellow citizens. No. And how do people win campaigns now other than the rigged voting machines? During the last 24, 48, 72 hours of a campaign, they pump as much money as they can into television advertising that it is destructive. It is phony. Democrats do it as well as Republicans. It is filled with lies. It is corrupt. So there's one way to do this. Get the money out of it. And as a corollary to all this, I don't think television stations or radio stations should ever, under any circumstances, be allowed to carry political ads. Ever, under any circumstances. If a candidate wants to reach the people, go to school gymnasiums, go to church basements, go to civic club meeting halls, go stand on a damn street corner. But in Mike Malloy's ideal political world, you would not be able to spend a single dime on television or a radio advertising. You can still buy ads in newspapers, I guess, and they can be lies too. But it's a little bit more difficult to lie to people when it's in print. That's why the only ones who still do it to any extent is the Fox Channel and these sick bastards that infest the Fox Channel. It's just a little harder to lie when it's in print because, you know, electronics, whether it's television or radio. Even with the internet, even with the ability to capture the stuff and put it on YouTube, still, it's out there, and then in a sense, it's gone. When you put something into print, it's there forever. So, to me, that's the solution, and that solution is as far removed from our political system as the nearest star system so is to Earth. So we might as well forget about it. It's gone, man.
I know. I don't see it improving. I couldn't agree with you more. That we are just awash in money. It's corrupt.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks a lot, Mike.
All right. Thanks for checking in. Appreciate it, Matt. But that, you know, that's the truth. To equate political money and the ability to influence elections through lies, deceit, fraud, deception, misinformation, disinformation, to equate that with the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution is to take the Constitution and turn it into toilet paper. And that's what right-wingers have done. And that's also what Democrats have done. So, any talk whatsoever about improving the political system, getting it back to a point where halfway rational discussion and debate can occur so that the people we send to Washington can use their heads and make rational decisions where it concerns laws or appointments or nominations. The only way that's going to happen is to get money out of the system. You know it as well as I do. It's just simply not going to happen any other way. As long as these senatorial or representative contests are determined by how much money can be spent, then the system is something other than what it was designed to be. You know, again, I'll use Michael Bloomberg because, you know, imagine spending, what did he spend? 50, 60, 70 million of his own dollars in order to get reelected for what was this the third time? He was, I think he had two terms and he wasn't supposed to succeed himself. So he spent a lot of money lobbying the New York State Assembly to get that changed. I think I've got this right. But tens of millions of dollars. Who can compete with that? And I read a campaign ad for you the other night from a guy who is trying to run against Charles Schumer. Remember? Huh? Do you remember his name? I bet you don't. Randy Credico? C-R-E-D-I-C-O? Randy Credico? He has in his campaign chest $4,650. Well, he doesn't even say campaign chest. That's his own personal bank account. Schumer has $21 million. Now, if we lived in a society, or in a system, I should say, where the better representative as a senator from New York would be determined by open debate, questions and answers, public discussion, then Randy Credico might have a chance. Because Charles Schumer would be put on the same level as Randy Credico. They both come out on a stage, they both take a seat, and they both answer questions. Very simple. But that's not the way it works. And that's why probably Charles Schumer will be reelected for yet another term as a corrupt, filthy, in the pocket of Wall Street senator from New York. So I listened to the talk about getting our system back, and I know it. And if you are a thinking human being, you know it. The system is not coming back. This is it. The only thing that can be done is to stop it from becoming even more corrupt. But I don't know how you do that when the Supreme Court rules that now corporations have as much right as corporations to influence elections as Joe or Jane Public, who has $20 to toss into somebody's campaign account. It's insane. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Just like my president. I want to make more money than I can spend. I want to build more bombs than I can send. Somewhere I can even spell the name of. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American.
Learning Anger Management. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. You know, another example of how this works, aside from the corruption that right-wing wealthy people constantly inject into the system, and their disdain, their utter disdain for the rest of humanity, even though these people get cancer and heart attacks and brain tumors and die just like everybody else. But for some reason, I guess they figure they have so much money while they're here, they're going to play a hell of a lot more than you are or I am. But the hard truth for these guys, for the most part, they are males, is that eventually they're going to slide into the unconscious state known as death. And, you know, I've said this before. I wish there was just a moment where they could look around after they've died and said, oh, my God, there's nothing here. But another example of how this works, how these filthy pigs work in tandem with certain outlets in media, a lot of them are on the Internet now, but Fox and Limbaugh and the rest of these pigs in particular. Here's an example from Media Matters. Early this week, conservatives were in their usual panic mode. That means they want to inject panic into the public over what they claimed was evidence that the Obama administration backed or preferred, their words, the release of Abdel Basset El-Megrahi, the terrorist better known as the Lockerbie bomber. As Media Matters pointed out, reports, often the same reports these conservatives were linking to in order to make their arguments, reports indicated that the administration wanted Megrahi to remain imprisoned with the stipulation that if he were to be released, he should remain in Scotland rather than risk his receiving what was referred to as an extremely inappropriate welcoming reception upon being transferred to Libya. Now, Fox News twisted reality to claim that, quote, U.S.-backed freedom, not prison for bomber, end quote. That was all over the Fox television. Matt Drudge, another pig, splashed a huge headline across his website announcing White House-backed release of Lockerbie bomber. Someone named Pam Geller, whose deranged rantings have earned her frequent appearances on Fox News and bylines on the pig Andrew Breitbart's websites, Tucker Carlson's Daily Caller, and The American Thinker, all of these called for a special investigation and a charge of treason against Obama. Limbaugh, while bragging, as he often does, that he was executing assigned host duties flawlessly with zero mistakes, claimed that Obama backed the release of the Lockerbie bomber because he wanted to make nice with the Muslim world. So, late Monday, when the State Department released the administration's correspondence with the Scottish Ministry of Justice, it confirmed in unambiguous terms that this administration was, quote, not prepared to support Megrahi's release on compassionate release or bail, and that it would be most appropriate for Megrahi to remain imprisoned for the entirety of his sentence, end quote. Those are from the cables that flew between, or whatever they call them now, the Scottish Embassy, the Scottish Ministry of Justice, I should say, and the Obama administration. So, after the story completely fell apart regarding Obama's treason with Megrahi, that these right-wing vermin kept pumping into the brain-dead Americans, after the story completely fell apart. Now here comes a laughable question for you. Did conservative media figures correct the record and let their victims know that the administration did not support or prefer the release of the Lockerbie bomber? Of course not. Of course not. It's just astonishing. And on Fox, almost 48 hours after the story had completely fallen apart, they still had the banners up that said White House, the U.S. backed freedom, not prison for the bomber. And the whole story was nothing but a complete, total, corrupt, filthy lie on the part of right-wingers. Now, should they have First Amendment protection? to do that? I say no. I say hell no. I say pull their licenses. Take it away from them. See, this is where it gets funny now to listen to, for me to listen to myself talk, as though those licenses could be pulled. The FCC is never going to do anything to these lying, filthy, traitorous right-wing outlets. They're just not going to. But in a just world, Limbaugh would have been flayed to the bone a long time ago. Somebody would have handed Beck enough whiskey and a ceremonial bayonet so he could have stopped his nonsense a long time ago. And, you know, on and on down the line. But that's not where we live. That's not where we live. We live in a country where the First Amendment says you can tell people lies all day long. You can incite insurrection and murder, and nobody's going to say a word to you.
Attention.
He's the primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malone.
That ends abruptly. Remember when the guy who wrote that, or the team that wrote that, won their Academy Award and they stood up there on the stage and thanked Jesus. Thank you, Jesus, for allowing us to win an Academy Award about our song, It's Hard Out Here for a Pimp. Unbelievable, man. Thomas and Madison.
Hey, Tom. Hi, Mike, when I stop laughing, I'll say something.
All right.
That was very good. And it's also nice, I got to say right off the bat, because there's so much depressing news. It's nice when I have to wait for you guys.
Yeah.
I get to hear music on the mic. They have, as you call it, chicken noodle news.
Yeah.
And the headline today was, the Gulf isn't as bad as they first thought. It's really not that bad.
Right.
It's like, you know, I've told you before, but I mean, I'm down now. We have Wart Radio, which I think is probably the best radio station in the United States. I've lived in Madison for 3 years in Europe and 36 here, mm-hmm. and it's the radio station, Wart, is just incredible. But I listen to Wart, you and Amy Goodman. I can't listen to anybody else anymore. Just, I can't stand it.
Well,
it's driving me mad.
I know. I understand what you're saying. People ask me, well, Kathy asked me, you know, don't you think we ought to listen to what they're saying on the crazy stations? And I simply can't. I can't do it. We have a station here, WSB, a station that I worked for. It was my first big break 23 years ago. I was working for WSB. It's a 50,000-watt uninterrupted channel station. Booms out to half the country. And when they went all talk, I was there, and I worked in the evening. Neil Bortz worked in the morning. And it got to the point, and Limbaugh was on the station, too. And it got to the point where...
I prefer the pig, man.
Yeah, really. It got to the point where WSB decided they were going to go all Nazi all the time. And so they got rid of me and brought in... Remember someone named Dr. Laura? I don't know what has happened to her. I don't know if she, if the pigs ate her or
porno pictures and her mother
died, and her body was rotting before Dr. Laura knew about it, and her son went over as a gung-ho soldier and then got busted or something for bad videos. I mean, the whole family, the entire...
Yep.
And this woman was giving counseling and advice to people. She had, she had a doctorate in physiology.
Well, Shakespeare, the blind lead the blind, and it's in a ditch.
Yeah, that's true.
Hey, wait, I just want to... I called before and I recommended, you know, that Ordinary Men. Because, you know, I hear you and, you know, I don't know you. But I, you know, really like listening to you and I like you. So I don't, you know where you're at or whatever, but I've heard you enough to know that you know some stuff. But Ordinary Men is like the practical. It's really, you know, people go, how can they be this nuts? Well, you read this, it's the people who did some very bad things, their testimonies in Nuremberg, and they give the reason why they went along with it, did it. And the other book, I would only recommend to you, not your listeners, because they're probably, but I know what you've said about yourself, and, you know, you pick up if you've gone through it yourself. But When Society Becomes an Addict, Kathy May, this is an incredible little book. This woman, Ann Wilson Schaefer, wrote in 87 during Reagan. And the core sickness, why these people are all like this, why they follow. She's a psychologist for like 40 years. She wrote Woman's Reality and Living in Process, books like that. But it's brilliant. And it's a little paperback. You can read it in like an hour.
What's the title?
It's called When Society Becomes an Addict.
Becomes an Addict.
Yes.
Okay.
She's written many books. She's like, I don't know if she's still alive because she wrote this in 87, but I found it at St. Vincent de Paul. I live across the street. Whoop, I shouldn't say that. I'm an artist, so when shit comes down, they're coming after me first. I know it.
Yeah, well,
I'll
listen,
be collected with you.
Listen, Tom, you can't say that word. Tom, you can't say the S word, so we've had to believe you. But I'm sorry. It's crazy. I realize in Madison right now it's almost 11 o'clock at night. It's almost midnight here. And you've heard me say goddamn and son of a bitch and bastard and all kinds of words on the air.
Okay, that's plenty now.
I'm just using example, Gabby. But the S word, the excrement word. I don't know if anything would happen now. The Supreme Court has ruled. Was there a recent ruling that said that you know, you can't restrict free speech?
You know, I just have no desire to be a test case.
Oh, I need.
It's just, you know, something
I
don't want to do.
It's not that we would be a test case. It's simply the fact that a lot of stations that carry our programs would drop it. They would just drop the program. And I'll tell you why. Not because the program directors for these stations actually care that much, but because of the complaints that would be generated by the right-wingers in whose sides I am an enormous thorn. So there would be this concentrated effort. We're shocked. I tell you, shocked. I mean, we've had that happen before. So, Tom, anyway... I'm glad you called in. We'll hear from you again, but we had to bleep you out tonight. The S word. Isn't that silly? Any scatological term or... mostly scatological terms now, right, Kathy?
Yeah, Molly's favorite.
Yeah, she's at that age. I heard several times on MSNBC... Keith Olbermann has used the GD word. And on Morning Joe, they've used the SOB word. So it's childish nonsense. I've said before, if we were on only XM and or Sirius, well, I guess it's the same now, any language is acceptable. Because to say otherwise is to really restrict free speech. This is the irony. The Wiley brothers can spend millions, tens of millions of dollars putting out lies and deception and a kind of political pornography in order to defeat a decent man, John Kerry. I'm not saying he was a great Democrat. I'm just saying he was a decent man. He didn't deserve... the kind of treatment he got from the pigs. But the pigs can do this anytime they want to. And if I come on the air and use the F word, or use a word that is reference body function, the radio stations that carry my program, a lot of them would just say, okay, that's enough of Malloy. Or up until the Supreme Court ruling, the FCC could say, okay, you can stay on the air, stupid man, but you also have to pay us a $350,000 fine. Well, they wouldn't really get me. They'd go after the radio stations, which is why the radio stations are reluctant to have someone on like me who is a loose cannon. And I don't blame them. My point simply is that real pornography, real bad language, real crimes against the country are committed minute by minute, all day long, on the very same medium, talk radio, that I'm involved in. Very same medium. And the crimes that are committed in talk radio on a daily basis are real crimes. I come in here at night, 9 to midnight Eastern time, and if one of my callers slips an S word or an F word, or if I do, oh my God. So, and I'm not blaming the radio stations. Not at all. I'm not blaming anybody. That's just the way it is. So, Tom, good to hear from you. We'll hear from you again, I'm sure. Keith is in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Hey, Keith. Hey, Keith. Keith. You got him potted up? All right, let me put it on hold.
Oh, I didn't.
Oh, we didn't. Okay. Hi, Keith.
Hi.
Hey.
This is probably way off topic for you guys tonight because I...
Nothing's off topic tonight. Go ahead.
Basically, I was just thinking, trying to fund the wars and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And shorten them up. Why not put a, you know, your capital gains tax that you pay on
right. Stocks
and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Why not just have a multiplier on it? The base multiplier being one, and then add one to the multiplier for every war you're fighting. That should get the money guys wanting to shorten the wars up real quick.
No, it probably would, Keith. But the real objective of the wars, aside from dominance and stealing other people's natural resources, is to bankrupt the country. Because if the United States is bankrupted, then Social Security, Medicare, social programs will have no money for funding. Yeah. And this is what the right-wingers have been trying to do in this country ever since the days of FDR. They want two classes of people. They want the ultra-wealthy. That would be the kings and the royalty, and then the rest of us, the serfs. In other words, it's a return to feudalism. And until they get that, they're not going to stop. They're going to continue. They're going to keep trying. Thanks, Keith. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Holloway. Sharon Gordy, Bruce Enberg, Kay Petrini, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, who all contributed to this program, and also Kathy Bay, who is our producer and engineer. Ali is calling from Thousand Oaks, California, and listening on KTLK. Hey, Ali.
Hi, Mike. How
are
you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Hey. I guess okay. I wanted to comment on an interview that I was listening to on NPR yesterday. This was with, Army's Vice Chief of Staff. And this was about the elevated rate of suicide and drug use in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
The reporter was asking some questions after giving some statistics based on the reports that the Army actually gave. And the questions were put very softly. I mean, this being NPR, I expected them to, you know, really drill this guy. But I don't know if it was a he or she, was asking that, do you think the elevated rate of suicide is really, has anything to do with these multiple tours of duty? And he was saying things like, no, you know, this may not be related to that because the soldiers have problems in their families and
right.
their wives or girlfriends or, you know, typical problems that a citizen has. And, you know, just trying to dodge the point. And also he was asked if, you know, why the drug use is elevated, rate of drug use. And he was saying that we don't really care about the drug use pretty much. We just want to make them battlefield ready.
Well,
I mean, they're not even trying to hide it anymore. They're just coming out with this stuff.
Yeah, during the Bush years, it was widely reported that the standards for entry into the military had been so reduced, if they existed at all. I guess they wouldn't take a convicted rapist or a convicted murderer. They want to train their own murderers. But the standards had been relaxed because they needed warm bodies. If you remember, during the height of the Iraq invasion and occupation by the United States government under Bush and Cheney, military recruiters were not meeting their goals because people realized that if they went to Iraq, they would come back with no arms or no legs or maybe half of their brain or their skull blown away. And it was an unjust situation to begin with. Iraq had never done anything to us. As a matter of fact, we had supplied Iraq with poisons and chemicals and weaponry so that they could kill Kurds and they could kill Iranians back in the 80s. So, you know, even the kind of folks who would join a military for the express purpose of going to a country that never did anything to us to kill people, even those kind of Americans, and they do exist, and there's millions of them who are willing to do that. They are sick bastards. But even those people are required to meet, or were required to meet, certain minimal standards. And the Bush crime family said, no, we're going to lower the standards because even those people are not signing up now. Nobody wanted to go because it was very clear what would happen. You go over, you kill some children, you kill some civilians, and then you get killed or an arm or a leg blown off. So the Army had a choice. Since the Army responds to corporate America now and not to the people, the Army chose to lower the standards so they would have a steady supply of bodies. And when that didn't seem to be working too well, of course, then Cheney came up with the plan, let's bankrupt the country completely. Let's give tax breaks to the wealthy that'll cost trillions. That'll destroy the economic system, as fragile as it is, as much damage has already been done by Bush and Clinton and Bush, but this will really destroy it. So all of a sudden we'll have this vast labor pool with no jobs. We'll have all the people in the military we could possibly want. Well, you know, to hear the kind of testimony that you're referring to, where the brass, first of all, they commission a report. The report comes back and says, yeah, people are committing suicide and murder and rape and doing drugs because there's no leadership. There's no commitment. There's no honor. There's no honor duty country anymore. You can't take these kids 18 and tell them that they're fighting for honor duty country and send them into Afghanistan, into a country that has been invaded periodically for 3,000 years. And every time the invaders have been had their asses kicked, and tell these young Americans, oh, you're fighting for freedom. I mean, even these people, even these kids understand. No, I'm not. I'm just over here to kill. This is like a video game. So it's all going to hell, Ali. I mean, you know, I'm not telling you anything you don't know.
But do they even think what's going to happen when these people come back home? The kind of
no. Well, why should they? Then it becomes someone else's problem. It becomes someone else's problem. It becomes the DA's problem. It becomes the local police problem. It becomes the prison industrial complex's problem when these youngsters come back totally with their minds blown and start killing people or robbing grocery stores or doing all kinds of bad things because they have been so traumatized by what the United States military and the United States government has put them through. But the military sees that as somebody else's problem. You know, it's not my problem. It's somebody else's. The whole thing is just insane, Ali. I mean, you know, and again, I'm not telling you anything that you don't know. All right, we're out of here. Thanks, Ali. If I didn't get to your calls tonight, if you're on hold, I apologize. We'll see you Monday. Take care. Have a good week. And keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Kevin Kenny, wherever you are.